I'd like everybody to put a pencil in your hand because we're going to ask you to write down today four key words. Be a good listener so that you don't miss these four key words. It's essential to what we're going to focus on today. Now, I want to begin by helping you join me in a little trivia quiz. Are you ready? What do you think is the longest running syndicated game show in American TV history? Here is a hint. It started in 1975. Another hint, it's my mother's favorite show. Another hint, it's a three-letter title, three-word title, and the first word is wheel. Do you get it? Let's say it together. Wheel of Fortune. Now you're saying, why did you tell us that? I'm glad you asked. Here's why. Do you know the background of the Wheel of Fortune? The background of the concept is that life is like a wheel. Suddenly you are at the top, a turn of circumstances, you're at the bottom. Or you're at the bottom, whoosh, now you're at the top. Now, that concept of looking at life that way is very ancient. You'll find it in the Roman Empire, but it started running with legs on it in 500 AD by a Christian statesman named Boethius. He made it very popular. And Boethius experienced the very thing he used as an analogy to teach about the Christian life and how it can change. Boethius happened to be the right-hand man of the Gothic ruler Theodoric. And Boethius was a Christian statesman, classically educated, well-connected family. He had reached the top of the wheel. When suddenly he was falsely accused of treason and he ended up in prison, he lost everything just like that. And while he was in prison, before he was executed, he wrote a classic piece of literature and he used the Wheel of Fortune as an analogy to teach Christian principles. That's when that concept really took off and became a teaching principle all through the Middle Ages. Boethius's life illustrated the point. We're not as in control as we think we are. A sudden, unplanned change in circumstances can suddenly move you to a place where you thought you were in control, I've got this covered, and boom, you're thrown to the bottom. Or conversely, you have lost hope, you're at the bottom, and circumstances change, and a whole new world opens up to you. Life is unpredictable. Now let me ask you this question. In that wheel, where is the absolute safest place you could ever be? In the center. In the center where it's stable and it's fixed. And here's the point. Every change in your circumstances on that wheel, every one of them, is sovereignly designed by God to call us move to the center. Live in the center. And in the center, that's where you will find Jesus Christ. Did you notice around the sanctuary today copies of this beautiful painting? Those that are observant, how many of you have noticed? Oh, good. A few walked in. Oh, I saw that. For those of you who don't have a clue, look at those pictures. They're on the door. And what this is a copy of a fresco that is literally 6 feet by 6 feet in a chapel in Italy, painted in 1305 by a painter named Giotto. And Giotto is painting this. It's called The Kiss of Judas. It's a powerful painting. It just moves and sways. You have Judas leading in this torch-lit, weapon-clad band of soldiers to arrest Jesus Christ. And then on the other side of the painting, he shows Peter taking out his sword and cutting off the guy's ear. And in the middle of the painting, the only place that is stable and calm and fixed is Jesus Christ. So you could retitle this painting, not The Kiss of Jesus, but you could title it Jesus, the only stable center in our chaotic lives. He's the only stable center. Now today we're going to examine John 18 verses 1 through 11. And it's Giotto takes this passage and puts it into a painting. He shows us what's going on in John 18, 1 through 11. There's the swirling strife and anxious friction of the soldiers who are coming into the garden to arrest Jesus Christ. And then there are two men in the painting who are seeking to be in control. One of them is Judas. He thinks he's got everything under control. And the other one is Peter, who is trying to take control by taking out his sword. But the one who is really in control of everything is right in the center. And his name is Jesus Christ. So this morning, on our wheel, maybe some of you are sitting here saying, man, I'm at the top of the wheel. I'm in control. I don't need God or nobody. Just hang on. Maybe some of you are at the bottom and you're just desperate and it seems like God totally forgot you. Hang on. It could change like that. Let's step into this story, into the painting, and put our lives there. And as we do it, John chapter 18, the first three verses, on the outer edge of the wheel at the top, there's Judas. He thinks he's in control of this. Judas at this point is thinking, my calculations, my plan, it's fallen right in place. You can almost hear the coins jingle at his side as he walks into the garden. These soldiers, they're following me. Everything I had in mind is falling right in place. I've maneuvered the political system. I'm in control. But he's really not in control. The soldiers aren't really obeying Judas. And when he looks into the eyes of Jesus, Jesus sees right into his dark, betraying soul. And Judas is about to have the wheel turned quickly, and everything's going to change for him. He's not in control. At the end of the passage, chapter 18, verses 10 and 11, there's another man trying to take control. It's Peter. He takes out his sword, and he's actually trying to do what he thinks is right and sincere, defend Jesus, and he cuts off a man's ear, the first one he can find. Peter thinks he's in control, but he's not. Peter is scared. You can almost smell the sweat of fear here. And Peter is not in control. It's about to slip into total chaos. He is not in control. There's only one person who's in control. It's Jesus Christ. Now, these whole events are really a blown up version of our lives. We all live on the wheel. It could change instantly. It is not predictable. We're not as in control as we think we are. So here's what to remember. That can either put you into anxiousness and fear, or there's a better alternative. Remember this. Jesus is always, 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 always working in the midst of the turn of the wheel, in the chaos of our lives. He's always working, and there are four things he's doing. Remember, you're looking for four words. We're going to get them one at a time and make this a grid for your life. The first thing Jesus does in the chaos of our lives, when the wheel turns, even if it seems unlikely, even if it seems he's not doing this, he is. Jesus will make his presence known in our chaos. There's your first word, presence. Jesus will make his presence known in our chaos. Look at verses 4 through 6. So Jesus, knowing all these things were coming upon him, went forth and said to them, "Whom do you seek?" They answered him, "Jesus the Nazarene." He said to them, "I am he." And Judas also, who was betraying him, was standing with them. So when he said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. I love that scene. These guys are marching in, "We're in control, we're going to arrest you," and they end up being so arrested by the holy presence of Jesus, it knocks them off their feet. Jesus is in control here, and Jesus has revealed his holy presence in a profound way. Now look at Jesus here. If you want to see men, what a man looks like, what a real man is like, look at this. This guy is bold. He is confident. He is fearless. He is courageous. Jesus is not hiding in the dark. He doesn't run out with weapons. He is weaponless. He marches right out, boldly confronts the entire mob and takes over and says, "I am he," and knocks them down. This is a man. This is a courageous man. And notice what he's doing. He is asking them, "Who do you seek?" And his response is literally, "I am." Jesus is doing a play on words. In Exodus chapter 3 at the burning bush, do you remember what God said to Moses? "I am. Tell him I am." That's what Jesus is saying. You've just encountered God in the flesh. I am. He unveiled his glory and knocked them down with it. Now, here is what you can't miss. Where did this come from? Where did Jesus get this kind of fearless courage? Something's changed. We forget Jesus is God, but he's fully man and he lived as a man. Up until this time, every time the enemies came after Jesus, he hid himself. He ran the opposite direction. He was in hiding. And now suddenly the mob comes and he's not in hiding. He has no weapon and comes out and confronts them. Where did he get that kind of courage? Jesus models for us. He went to the center of the wheel. You see, in the garden, and when the mob showed up, Jesus, his wheel turned. His circumstances changed. Where did he go? To the center. He went into the garden and three times said, "Father, if it's possible, take this cup from me." And three times, "Not my will, but yours." He centered himself on the Father's will. Here's what Jesus models for us. Life is all about knowing God and being used for his purposes. And once he had settled that by faith, unbelievable courage and confidence could come out and confront them. Jesus found courage in the presence of God. That's what he's telling us to do. In the center of our wheel, run to his presence. Now, what does it look like to actually live there? To put that in practice? When your circumstances suddenly shift, how do you do this? I had a holy moment Thursday morning in my office. And I asked permission to share this. Daryl McDonald, who's a member of our church, came to visit me. I've known Daryl for a number of years. By his own admission, a number of years ago, he was very controlling and in control of his life and advancing in his career and living for his career and neglecting his family. Suddenly, almost overnight, the wheel turned. He had a stroke. He lost all of his skills. He lost his career. He ended up losing his marriage. He went from here to the bottom. And then he took out of his briefcase a letter that his dad had written him right after the stroke. And he turned it into a triangle. And he said, "I want to tell you what I've learned." He said, "You see this triangle? It's reaching up toward God. And notice the base. It's really stable. You cannot knock it over. That's the way I'm living now. Here's the way I used to live." He turned it over. And he said, "This is very unstable. I used to aim everything at me being in control, advancing in my career. And God knocked it over. And now I found this. That was a holy moment for me. I sat there thinking, would I respond that way? Later in the week, I talked to him and he said, I'm finally at the place where I can honestly say, God, thank you for the stroke. Because you gave me a priceless gift. I would have never listened. I would have never got it any other way. And the priceless gift, he said, Steve, I know God. I really do live for his glory. I know what stability is now. That's what this looks like. In your wheel, when it turns, it's a call. Go to the center. You'll find the presence of Jesus there if you'll seek him by faith. Second thing Jesus is doing. Not only can we expect his presence at the center, but Jesus can be relied on to be in control of our chaos. That's the second word, control. He is in control. He really is. Look at John chapter 8, verses 7 through 9. Therefore, again, he asked them, whom do you seek? They said, Jesus the Nazarene. Jesus answered, I told you that I am he. So if you seek me, let these go their way to fulfill the word which he spoke of those whom you have given me. I lost not one. Now look at this. Judas and the whole crowd thought, man, we are in control of the situation. Oh, no, they're not. They end up not having Jesus obey their commands. They are obeying the commands of Jesus. He takes over. Do you see what Jesus has done? Two times, on purpose, steps out and makes them say it out loud. Who do you seek? Jesus the Nazarene. They said it twice. And then he turned those words against them. You've already said it. Take me. Let these go. You didn't ask for them. You asked for me. He is in control of this situation. And in doing that, and they obeyed him. They are following his commandments. He's in charge. And they fulfilled what Jesus had just prayed in John 17. I lose not one that you have been given to me. Jesus is in control of this situation. That's the message we should walk away with. It may not look like it, but he really is. Nothing comes into your life by accident. If you belong to Jesus Christ, he knows exactly what he's doing in your life. Now, what does that look like? How do you live that out? I had another holy encounter on February the 4th. When I opened my email from our missionary, Dave Lyons, one of my very close friends. I will always remember February the 4th as one of the most difficult days of my life. The day we learned that our 12-year-old Ian had aggressive cancer. I don't think I've ever cried so much in one day or even in a week. I feel kind of numb. At the same time, listen to this, at the same time I have strong confidence in God's loving care and sovereign control. I'd not say that I'm worried. Each day has enough trouble of its own. I'm just putting one foot in front of the other. He goes on and here's how he ends it. I've learned that trusting God does not mean that he will never hurt us. I'll trust you anyway. With full confidence that you're truly in control, working everything for our good. When his wheel turned, he ran to the center. And he believed Jesus is in control. The third thing Jesus does, when our circumstances change, not only does he give us his presence, not only is he in control, but he brings us his direction. There's the third word, direction. Look at verses 10 and 11. Simon Peter then, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's slave and cut off his right ear. The slave's name was Malchus. So Jesus said to Peter, put the sword into the sheath. The cup which the Father has given me, shall I not drink it. He will give guidance every time. Guidance that you don't expect. Guidance that doesn't match what seems right. But you have to obey it by faith. Jesus always does this. Jesus will give you guidance that is counterintuitive, like this. If you want to have your needs met, give. If you want to be exalted, humble yourself. If you want to find life, give your life away. If you want to be strong, admit you're weak. He does this over and over again. Now, what does it look like to go to the center and really believe that? A book that has had a profound impact on me, I first read it in 2005, is called The Emotionally Healthy Church. It's written by a pastor about my age in New York City. His wheel suddenly turned. After planting a flourishing church, 9 years, things are going great. Man, I'm at the top. And his wife comes to him one day and looks him in the eye and she says, "Sit down." She was serious. She said, "Listen to me, Peter. I quit the church." You can't quit. The pastor's wife. "Listen, I quit. I quit. I'm tired of the way you live. You're a workaholic. You neglect the family. You're preoccupied. And furthermore, I don't respect your leadership anymore. I quit. And on top of that, I'd be happier living separate from you than with you. You drive me crazy. I quit." His wheel. Whoosh. He was angry. He was frustrated. And that began a journey. He began to start looking inside of his heart. God got his attention. He screams in our pain, whispers in our pleasures. For the first time in his life, he went to counseling. He began to restudy the scripture. Over a period of a few years, his eyes were opened up and he heard Jesus like he'd never heard him before. And he learned the theology that he had totally neglected that is everywhere in scripture. But he never saw it. The theology of weakness. Do you know who the most dependent man who ever lived was? Jesus. "I can do nothing apart from the Father. I'm weak, but in you I'm strong." The Apostle Paul models it over and over. "I can do all things through Christ," theology of weakness. "When I admit my weakness, then I find my strength." He began to develop a whole new theology. The result is this book, end of the story. He got his wife back. He got his church healthy. He's began to have a healthy, balanced life. Do you see what happened? When his wheel turned, he went to the center and he got direction from Jesus that seemed counterintuitive. I haven't learned it this way, but it's different. And obeying it by faith changed his life. I've gone through the same journey. I want to tell you what I've learned. If you won't listen, hang on. He'll get a bigger stick. You will listen. I've learned, I don't want the stick. I'll listen. Now that next thing, Jesus not only at the center gives you his presence, not only is he in control, not only does he give you direction, save the best for last, he brings redemption out of our chaos. There's our word, redemption. Look at this last verse. It's astounding. Peter put the sword into the sheath. "The cup which the Father has given me, shall I not drink it?" What's the cup? I went through the Bible and studied every reference to cup in Old and New Testament, summarizing there are two cups, the cup of salvation and the cup of the wrath and judgment of God on sin. Every one of us, listen, everybody's going to drink one of those cups. Those are your only two options. And Jesus is saying, "The Father has given me a cup, and it's the cup of the wrath of God." Jesus, by faith, at the Last Supper, said, "Gentlemen, take the cup. It is my blood which is shed for you for the remission of sins. I am going to the cross and I'm going to have all of the sin of the world laid on me. I will be treated like a sinner and God will judge me as a sinner and damn me. I will take your hell for you. That was the cup. That's the way God is. Jesus on the cross or in the garden could have looked at us and said, "You ought to be drinking this cup. I never sinned. You did. You deserve this." But he drank it. Do you know why he drank it? So that he could give us the cup of salvation. So that what he modeled running to the sinner, we could actually do. Because of Jesus' death on the cross, he tore down every single barrier between us and God. And when our wheel turns, we can run to the presence of God. Jesus makes it possible. The cup of salvation. I can drink from it every single day because of Jesus. He is my Redeemer. There's nobody like him. Nobody. Who else could ever model for you perfectly when your wheel turns, run to the sinner? Nobody but Jesus. Who else could make it possible for you to come into the presence of a holy God, even though you're a sinner? One person, Jesus, who drank the cup of God's wrath. He is like no other. And when your circumstances change, that's his voice. Run to the sinner. Run to the sinner. Now, I've given you four words. Here's what I want to ask you to join me in doing this week. Here are the four words in case you haven't got them. Presence, control, direction, redemption. Say them with me. Presence, control, direction, redemption. Now this week, hang on, our wheels are going to turn. It's just the way life is. When it happens, it's God calling, run to the sinner. Take your four words. Those are what Jesus does. You only open this by faith. Now, some of you here today are living out on the rim. Maybe you're at the top and you're strutting around thinking God is for weak people. Don't be a fool. Every breath you take is from a sovereign and a good God. If you are blessed, he puts you there, can take it away in an instant. Don't be prideful. Some of you are at the bottom. You are thinking, where is God? What is he doing? He's forgotten me. Let me remind you of something. When the disciples saw Jesus die on a cross, from their point of view at that time, they thought they were hoodwinked. We've been deceived. We believed the wrong one. Our Messiah shouldn't be killed by the Romans. Little did they know. That was the greatest work of God in history, saving us from our sin. When you're in a dark place, God is still at work. He can change things. Don't lose heart. Go to those center and take those four words and make it your mental grid and open this by faith over and over again. That's the way we find life. He's like no other. Don't you adore him?